You're listening to Red Eye on Co-op Radio at CFRO 102.7 FM.
Here in BC and in many other jurisdictions, governments have begun programs that give you a cash award for your old polluting car so you can buy a new one. These programs are part of government response to the climate change crisis. In the U.S., a consumer can get $3,500 to $4,500 trade-in voucher for their gas guzzler. An article in this month's Coal Type Reader, Michael I. Neiman calls the Obama administration's Cash for Clunkers programs a $1 billion subsidy to the auto industry. Michael Neiman is a professor of journalism and media studies at Buffalo State College, and he joins me this morning from Ithaca, New York. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
How does the Cash for Clunkers program under Obama's administration work?
Well, basically, people who have a car that qualifies as a clunker can get a grant ranging from $3,500 to $4,500 U.S. towards the purchase of a brand new car. The catch is your old car has to be a clunker, which means it has to get 18 miles per gallon or less. And your new car has to best that performance. Now, here's where the program really falls apart as an environmental program. It's one of many places it falls apart, actually, in that your new car only has to get 2 to 5 miles per gallon better than your old car, depending on which program you're working with, whether it's an SUV, whether it's a light truck, or whatnot. What the program does, in effect, is, well, one thing it does is that, you know, let's look at the alternatives, right? You know, a lot of folks in Vancouver have been to Havana, have seen these 50, 60, 70-year-old cars buzzing around on the streets of Havana. That's the other model. Environmentally, keeping a car on the street, keeping a car on the roads forever, actually has a lower footprint, not just the carbon footprint, but all kinds of heavy metals that are involved in the production of a car, all kinds of pollutants, all kinds of issues with strip mining to get the materials for a car and so on. To keep the old car on the road indefinitely, and ultimately, you're going to have, even though it's less efficient than the new car, you're going to have a lower footprint. It takes about 7 tons of CO2. That's not even looking at heavy metal pollution and whatnot. About 7 tons of CO2 to manufacture a car. So if you're pulling a few hundred thousand cars off the road, perfectly good cars that run and can run indefinitely, I mean, that's what Cuba has taught us, right? That, you know, a junkyard ultimately is a culture-bound syndrome. You know, cars don't have to go to junkyards every 10 or 15 years.
Well, what does happen to the cars that are being turned into the rebate? Are they automatically being sent to a junkyard?
Yeah, actually, there's a complex verification procedure in place to verify that the cars have been destroyed. You have to, and I forget exactly how it physically works, driving a large hole through the engine block to destroy the engine. The cars have to be destroyed, so not only are they taken off the road, but a lot of the major parts of the car are no longer be available in the used auto parts market.
Now, you mentioned that the environmental footprint of replacing cars and using Cuba as an example is much greater than the impact of current cars. Can you get into a little bit of the detail of that? What's involved in building the car, and then what happens after the car is destroyed?
Right. You know, the steel, the aluminum that you use in building a car, you know, the iron that comes, there's chromium, there's bauxite, there's nickel. Americans, you know, this all North Americans, right, don't really think about where things come from, right? Steel production more and more is carried out overseas, so we don't really see these dirty plants. And they're carried out in countries with lax environmental and worker safety regulations, which is one of the reasons why it's cheaper to import steel from across the ocean. Bauxite, which is also, you know, a component of automobiles, you know, the largest bauxite producers are Guinea, Jamaica, Brazil, Australia. Right? Bauxite is harvested through strip mining, where the surface forest and soil is destroyed. There's zinc. When you produce zinc, there's all kinds of heavy metal lace, you know, slag. You're producing sulfur dioxide, cadmium vapor. You get into the car, we're dealing with PVC, which is a material that is toxic when it's produced, it's toxic when it's disposed of. And I can go on and on and on to taking the car apart piece by piece. The actual physical act of building a car and then the act of disposing of the car both have extremely heavy environmental footprints. For a lot of cars, that environmental footprint is heavier than the environmental footprint that actually comes from using the car. Now, with the Cash for Clunkers program, this is even more problematic because your new clunker only has to best your old clunker by 2 to 5 miles per gallon. So you can pull a 16-mile-per-gallon clunker off the road and replace it with an 18-mile-per-gallon clunker, causing a 2-ton piece of machinery to be destroyed and replaced with only a 2-mile-per-gallon increase in its efficiency, which over the course of that car's lifetime is never going to come anywhere near to compensating for the environmental footprint of trashing a perfectly good car. And there's now something I didn't even anticipate, and there is a ripple effect in that the coming lack of replacement parts for old cars on the road, because these cars aren't being traded in and going to junkyards, they're being destroyed, means that other cars that were not traded under the Cash for Clunkers program will also have to come off the road subsequently because there are no replacement parts cheaply available to keep them running. So you see a lot of cars go into junkyards and need to be replaced. Mm-hmm. So from an environmental perspective, you know, the program clearly is problematic. And if you look at how there's two phases, right? The government gave $1 billion U.S. to fund this program initially. And, you know, the auto consumers blew through that $1 billion in 5 days, more or less. Nobody still has quite done the accounting because the Department of Transportation, you know, which is funding the program, really isn't in the business of operating a program like this. But during that first phase, about 40% of the new vehicles bought were SUVs and light trucks.
Wow.
So about 40% of the vehicles that were bought were clunkers. Now, clearly, you know, one of the most popular vehicles was a 35-mile-per-gallon Ford Focus, but there are very few of those on the lots to begin with because, you know, when the economy got tougher, and when fuel got more expensive, even though it got cheaper again, people remember, you know, I think Americans can remember back maybe 1-2 years, right? So we remember it was expensive last year. So people, you know, have been buying smaller cars. What the Cash for Clunkers program has done is it's cleared a lot of these otherwise, you know, unsellable SUVs off of dealer lots. So if you look at the subsequent coverage in the corporate media, mainstream media focuses on the economic impact. The program's been a fantastic success. It's caused consumer spending to go up. You know, it's really a shot for an ailing economy. You know, it's helping these auto companies, yada, yada. Nobody's talking about the environment anymore.
Hmm. Well, does the program in any way reach the population that drives the oldest and most smog-producing cars? Because it seems like when you tell me that you really need to make a very slim kind of margin on your new car in the sense that you're going maybe 2 to 5 miles per gallon, that doesn't seem like a lot of more efficiency. What about with the older, the real kind of dirty smog-producing cars?
Right. Absolutely not, because the other catch is you can only participate in this program if you could otherwise afford to buy a new car. If you're bankable under current conditions, which are more difficult, to actually get a car loan, you can afford to pay off that loan. So people who are driving some of the most rundown cars on the road cannot be in the new car market, so those cars will stay on the road. Plus, there's also a rule that the car has to be built within the last 25 years in order for it to be eligible to be scrapped in the Cash for Clunkers program. Interestingly enough, this means that all the cars scrapped have advanced pollution controls on them. You know, the big turning point was catalytic converters, and you know, in the mid 1970s. So the dirtier cars that don't have these more sophisticated pollution controls are not even eligible to be scrapped in the Cash for Clunkers program. And you know, a more effective way to spend $3 billion U.S., which is what the total now is running, you know, would be to put out grants for low-income people to repair the pollution control systems on their cars, perhaps. Or, you know, even better yet, fund mass transit and get people off the road, you know, into buses and subways.
Now, you also criticized the program for rewarding people who bought gas-guzzling SUVs 10 years ago. Do they benefit more than people who bought fuel-efficient vehicles?
Absolutely. What I wrote was that the more selfish you were back then, and hence the lower, you know, MPG rating on your clunker, the more selfish you can be today, because your new clunker only has to best your old clunker's lousy mileage by 2 to 5 miles per gallon. So, you know, the more antisocial your purchase was, let's say 10 years ago, the more antisocial your new purchase can be. Hmm. And only cars getting less than 18 miles per gallon even qualify. So, for instance, if you want to take your, you know, 25-mile-per-gallon Toyota and trade it in for a 50-mile-per-gallon hybrid, this program is not for you. You can't do it. You have to own a gas guzzler. You know, so you can trade in your, you know, your 16-mile-per-gallon light truck for an 18-mile-per-gallon light truck, but not your 25-mile-per-gallon Camry for a 50-mile-per-gallon Prius.
Now, interestingly, like when you look at these programs, and I think we had one here in BC. It's a little bit different that offers a subsidy to people to buy a hybrid to sort of turn in their old car, and when they buy a hybrid, they get a $2,000 subsidy. And a local professor found that 2/3 of those people plan to buy that hybrid anyway. So what are the alternatives to these kinds of programs, things that could make a real difference in terms of the environment and provide good transportation?
Well, I mean, let's look at, you know, your average car weighs around 3,000. Your average small car, right, weighs 3,000 pounds, 3,500 pounds. And, you know, your average driver weighs between 150 and 225 pounds. This is a really inefficient system for moving humans around. You know, having a 3,000 or 4,000 pound machine to move a 150 or 200 pound cargo. You know, the only way really to deal with this problem is to get people out of cars, and to offer as many incentives as possible to do that. You know, underwrite mass transportation. People who ride buses and trains, if they ran more efficiently, if there were more of them, if they were cheaper, if they're more comfortable. I mean, where I live in Buffalo, New York, you know, riding the bus means being dropped off and any time of the year, right? This could be in the middle of a blizzard and having to wait on a corner, a dark corner, desolate corner, maybe, you know, half an hour, for the connecting bus to come by. You know, you have one bus going by an hour. The buses break down. The buses are rusted out. You know, mass transportation is not really funded. We even shut down our bus system for 2 days when we ran out of money. You know, that would be a much better alternative, not getting people out of SUVs and into newer, brighter, you know, sexier SUVs.
Well, it's been good talking to you this morning, Mike.
Good talking to you, too.
Okay, take care. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I've been speaking with Michael I. Neiman. His article, Cash for Clunkers, is in the newest edition of the free progressive magazine, Coal Type, and that's available at coaltype.net.